Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is gaming writer Ken Adams. Ken writes for the CDC Gaming Reports, and we'll be talking to him shortly. Last week, Richard and I were off, and we aired a pre-taped show with Richard Marcus. While it was a good show, it prevented us from talking about two gambling cheating items that have been making headline news, so we'll talk about them tonight. On this show, it's been pretty unanimous that what Phil Ivey and his companion did was not cheating. When he played versions of Baccarat at the Crockford's Club in London and the Borgata in Atlantic City. A judge in London disagrees with all of us, and his vote counts more. The judge ruled that the edge sorting techniques that Ivy and his partner were using was unfair to the casino, so the casino doesn't have to give Ivy the $12 million or so that he actually won. Ivy got a bad beat here. It's thought that the $12 million was of no consequence to him, but being branded as a cheater is a big, big deal, especially when you weren't. If this holds up on appeal, if it is appealed, and particularly if the Atlantic City case is decided in the same way, this will change the rules significantly about what is and is not cheating. Most Advantage players believe the casino have all the advantages. Casinos choose the games to offer, select whether you're going to be allowed to play or not, adjust the rules every which way they want, and then hope enough suckers come through the door to play and lose. It should not be the player's responsibility to protect the casinos from their own mistakes. If Crockford thought that the rules requested by Phil Ivey and his companion were unreasonable, and many other casinos did, then Crockford's could easily have said no thank you to Phil Ivey's special request. But they said yes, sure, come on in. And they lost big to players using their brains and eyesight, nothing more. And now they want a mulligan so that their losses don't count. This doesn't strike me as fair at all. Richard, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I've said this often in the past. When players ask me if casinos cheat, I think your chances of being cheated by the dealers having taken cards out of the shoe or dealing seconds are very, very rare these days. But the way that casinos cheat now is they take a free shot at your money. So in a case like this, if you lose, great for them. If you win, well, they just won't pay. And, you know, this has happened in the United States and a number of Indian casinos. So this is the way that casinos now cheat. I want to say for our listeners that I obtained a copy of the judgment from the case, and I put that up on my site at richardmunchkin.com today, so that you can read the actual judgment.
That's a scoop. That's not anywhere else that I know about.
No, I don't. To my knowledge, it hasn't been released anywhere else yet. So, But anyway, next week, our guest is going to be Bob Nersessian, a gaming attorney, frequent guest of the show. And so we're going to talk about this a lot more when Bob is on the show.
Very good. In a series of articles by Wired magazine over the past several months, the story about two video poker players who found a way to get a video poker machine to greatly overpay them has been discussed. It's difficult to know whether we're getting the true story or not from the articles, but for now, we're going to take them at face value. Apparently, one day, a player was randomly hitting some buttons on a machine, changed to a higher stake, and the machine immediately locked up. Perhaps it was four deuces and a kicker the player had earned at quarters, worth $200. It was now being paid off at $2 stakes, which is $1,600. The player accepted the bonanza. The player then tried to duplicate what he had done randomly. Through experimentation, he eventually discovered the exact sequence of button pushes that would trigger the machine to perform this way. It included having the double-up feature being turned on a particular generation of IGT video poker machines. Once the player and his partner perfected this, they took it on the road, so to speak. The two biggest casinos they hit were the Silverton here in Las Vegas and the Meadows in Pittsburgh. The total gathered was well over $1 million. In a conversation I had with the general manager of the Silverton, Craig Cavalier, shortly after the player hit them for the second time, the player was playing on a multi-denominational machine and would play until he got a jackpot at $1 and then would press buttons in the right sequence so that it appeared he hit it on a $10 denomination. Under these conditions, the casino doesn't have a chance. A player loses at $1, and the only play they get at $10 is when a four-of-a-kind jackpot is already there. After a couple years of legal haggling, the players got to keep the money. Presumably, IGT had to pay off the machines for the machine malfunction, and that malfunction has since been corrected. I personally have mixed feelings about this, simply because I find it difficult to believe that the players figured it out on their own. It seems much more likely that a rogue programmer at IGT placed this intentional bug in the software and told these players about it for a share of the profits. If that happened, and there's no evidence that I've heard that it actually did, then it would be cheating, and the players and the programmer would be looking at hard time. That explanation seems much more likely to me than what they say actually did happen. If the players did indeed discover it by themselves, then they should be entitled to keep what they made. It seems likely that they could have milked this for a lot more than they actually did from many different casinos, but you just don't know. Richard, what's your take on this?
I thought this case was really fascinating. The first thing that surprised me was when I had originally heard about it, I assumed that these were professional advantage players. The article makes them out to be really degenerate gamblers.
Yes.
Which, once I thought about it some more, makes sense. I mean, they say that this guy was such a degenerate that he actually owned one of these machines and would play it in his home where there isn't any real money involved. So I think if a guy is that addicted to a game, I think he could find this sequence. And I should say that what you're saying about a rogue programmer, both of these things could be true. There could have been a rogue programmer who put this backdoor in the machine and was milking it for years, and you know, these two bozos come along and ruined his honeypot, you know. We don't know. But the other thing that struck me was it reminded me of the movie Treasure of the Sierra Madre, where
Humphrey Bogart.
It was a Humphrey Bogart movie and Walter Houston, and they're going after this gold, and basically the gold turns them insane and they start turning on each other. And that's also what happened in this case. This guy discovered this money machine and he told his friend about it. And very quickly there started to become disagreements about how they were going to carve up the money and I shouldn't have to pay you this. And it really broke their friendship apart. And I have found in the past with blackjack teams that often problems really begin when you start making a lot of money. Suddenly people get greedy and it causes fissures. So the whole case I thought was really fascinating. I doubt that it was somebody. I doubt that they had contact with a rogue programmer just because they did this so badly. They could have made so much more money and never been detected.
Had you somehow learned of this, how would you have milked it?
I would have never hit more than one jackpot a day in any single casino. And, you know, I mean, it just would then be a matter of how much money do you want to make per day? Is $10,000 a day enough? I think they could have easily made that, you know.
Indefinitely.
Indefinitely, yeah.
I suppose I could live on $10,000 a day if I had to. I've never tried, but I think I could.
Yeah, and they played no cover at all either.
But actually they did, at least according to Craig Cavalier, who's they had a sense as to where the cameras were. And so the guy actually stood in front of where he thought the camera was when he was touching buttons in a certain way. So what he would do was actually disguised. So it turned out there were two cameras.
But my understanding is also that if they saw a machine that had a jackpot on it that somebody had walked away from after collecting it, they could just go push the series of buttons and collect it again without putting any money in the machine, without, you know.
That struck me as incredibly stupid.
Yes, exactly.
And putting your player's card in at these times and asking for comps in also is...
mind-boggling.
Okay, 2 weeks ago, Richard and I, along with Michael Shackelford, were talking about what we did or didn't like at the G2E Gaming Show. Shaq spoke briefly about a new pinball game called Vegas 2047. Apparently, he didn't describe the game with 100% accuracy, and the following day, on his Wizard of Vegas website, several posters said some negative things about the game. One of the vice presidents of the company who made the game then proceeded to chew me out because certain people on Shaq's site didn't like his game. Clearly my fault. I looked at the publicity displayed online at ntech.com. That's ntek.com. I said N twice. There's only one N. ntek.com. And about the game, it's designed to be a skill-based game for high-limit players. The better your pinball skill, the better your results will tend to be. But there's also a random number generator that determines whether you will win or lose. The company is to be commended for bringing a new type of game to the casino market. Perhaps this will appeal to a different sort of player than the games that currently exist.
You know, I did see an article about this game just today, but the thrust of the article was that they're really trying to attract a younger generation of casino players, getting young people interested in playing a slot machine. They're just not interested in pushing a button, watching reels spin around. So they want more interaction with the video game generation. The question is how much skill is actually involved and can you get an edge playing the game? But I guess that is still unclear at this point, right?
Well, they say you can get an edge, and since I am not personally a pinball wizard, and if a pinball wizard is the one who can get the edge, and since I'm not such a wizard, then for sure this is not a game I would play, because presumably I would be penalized more for not being such a wizard, so that the house could still make enough money while paying off the advantaged players. I prefer being on the advantage side of this gambling than the paying the advantage player side.
You know, my fear, if I were the casino, my fear would be that this would attract the riffraff that hang around in the slot machines, you know, the guys who used to go after 25-cent piggy bank machines, waiting for the old lady to play badly on it so they could then get on the machine after the old lady leaves. And
well, I don't think they're going to have that problem. It's currently designed to be in high limits. So you're going to pay quite a bit, you know, $50, $100. But a significant stake. And you can win a small amount, a small percentage. And so the low-level, what did you call them, riffraff? I don't want to call them, whatever they are, the fleas something. then they probably won't hang out here because... putting $50 or $100 per game is makes it appeal to a limited number of people.
Do you have any idea how long it takes to play one game on this machine?
Well, I've physically never seen the game. Shaq said it took some time. So I'm assuming that meant 30 seconds, a minute, something like that. I don't know. Possibly on a pinball game where you have flippers, good players can keep a game going for several minutes or several tens of minutes.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about the casino hold. I don't know. We'll see how the machine does.
All right. Let's talk to Ken Adams. Ken Adams has been in and around the casino business for 45 years. He is the executive editor of CDC Gaming Reports. Ken Adams, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Atlantic City. They haven't had a good year. Four casinos have already closed this year. Possibly one more is going to be closing in the near future. Have we learned anything from this?
From this year or from the trend? It started when Pennsylvania introduced slot machines, and this is just the ending edge of it. As Atlantic City, when it opened, had an exclusive market. They had New York City. They had 30 million people within a couple hours' drive of them. But as beginning with somewhere in the, I don't know when Foxwoods opened, but in the 90s, and then certainly with Pennsylvania in 2006, they've had competition, and it's increasing all the time. Another casino just opened last month in Baltimore, in Maryland. And Baltimore is now, and Maryland is now doing $80 million. It's not a big number, $80 million a month. Pennsylvania did just short of they did $200 million this year, this month. So, you know, you just take those two together, and that's $280 million that people wouldn't have all gone to Atlantic City, but a dollar or two would have been.
And what did Atlantic City do last month?
Atlantic City's results just came out, and they are down 13%. The news on it was a bit confusing because the press of Atlantic City does not like to say it's a bad news anymore. So they stated it that it was the gaming revenues were up, but that was only for the casinos that were open the entire time. When you take the total amount, it was down. Those four casinos, those eight casinos, were up. But the market was down. They did just less than $200 million. And at their high point, not necessarily September, but they were doing closer to $500 million. They had 400 and something. So they're down about 50%, just rough numbers at this point. And this year is obviously not over. And it appears that whatever happens with Trump, that he is going to close. It may reopen and it may do something, but it's been a long process. And what have we learned from it? That there are a limited number of gamblers in the country, and there's a limited amount of disposable income that goes to gaming and gambling. And the more competition, the more kinds of gambling, the more options there are, then the more that money spread around.
So do you think they're going to be a ghost town in 20 years, or is there hope?
A ghost town. No, I think there will still be casinos. For one thing, there is almost guaranteed that the ocean will still be there and that there will still be hotels and casinos on the ocean, and people will still go there for vacations and things. Will it ever again have 12 casinos on its way to 15 or whatever number that people thought it was once have and thinking it was going to surpass Las Vegas in gaming revenue? No. Will it find another identity that is a more diversified one? Yes, I believe it will.
It seems
but
like
it's going to be a painful process.
Yeah, it seems Las Vegas has made a big transition into you know, it used to be all the revenue was gaming, and now gaming, you know, isn't the major source of revenue. I think Vegas seems to have done a good job of finding other ways to bring people here and get them here and to spend money that isn't for gaming. And Atlantic City doesn't seem to be doing very well at that at all.
Well, I think there's truth in that, certainly. But there's another side to that. One of the questions that you posed to me prior to the interview was whether or not I thought regulation had anything to do with it. And Atlantic City's regulation was cookie-cutter regulation. They insisted on everything being exactly the same, and they told the casinos exactly how to do things. In Nevada, we have a minimum standards model. You have to meet these standards in any way you want to do it. So we don't tell somebody how many rooms they have, how many slot machines, what percentage of slot machines have to come from one manufacturer. We don't say how much public space they have to have. We don't tell them how many parking spaces. We don't tell them any of those things. And as a consequence, you end up with Las Vegas as the today. There were the 20 of the top 100 grossing restaurants. A restaurant grossed $64 million in Las Vegas last year.
Amazing.
There are casinos that didn't do that in Atlantic City. So that's the 10 out of the top 20 disc jockeys in the world are in Las Vegas. You could buy a casino in Atlantic City for less than it would cost you to build a nightclub and hire a disc jockey in Las Vegas. Las Vegas has so much and so much capital invested in it. There are billions of dollars invested in this trip. There's no other place in the world with that much entertainment money in that short of space. And that guarantees for a very long time that people will be going to Las Vegas regardless of the economy and regardless of the other things. They still go. Now, doesn't mean we won't have ups and downs and we don't need to diversify within gaming that income, but it's certainly Las Vegas is a dramatic place. And people in Atlantic City said for years, and they're everywhere, we don't want to be like Atlantic City. Well, guess what, guys, you aren't. I mean, like Las Vegas. You aren't. Las Vegas is successful, and you aren't, because they limited their product to a very, very narrow range.
Well, my guess is Atlantic City in 20 years will be very different than it is today, and I have no idea what it's going to look like, but it isn't going to look like it is today. It will.
That's a fact. Reno's a good model for at least thinking about it. It won't look like it, but Reno, of course, the Tesla announcement is a big change, and it's what Reno needed really for the tipping point. But Reno has gradually, over the last 20 years, we've lost 25 casinos maybe in the downtown, in the central casino district over the last 20 years. And those will never be replaced. There are lots of different kinds of new businesses moving into Reno. And that's what Reno's future is. It still has casinos, but it has a different identity. It will never again be thought of as a major casino city. It'll be a nice little community with some other stuff that incidentally has some casinos, most of which cater to locals.
And they'll still call itself the biggest little city in the world forever.
Maybe.
All right.
There are people who think that it's time to jettison that and start over with something new, but
okay.
I don't know.
G2E, Global G2E. Gaming Expo. It took place in Las Vegas 2 weeks ago. What did you see that was interesting?
Well, there were, first, the people that are attending, and this is only anecdotally, this is just what I saw, it appears to me that mix of people is becoming much more heavily weighted towards people from other countries. That with the expansion, particularly now, with the expansion to Asia, there are lots of people coming from other countries here. And when I first started to go to the shows, but they weren't always G2E, but in Las Vegas, everybody was from Nevada. We knew everybody. It was Nevada. And then there were people. And then when Indian gaming came, it was heavily weighted towards tribal members who were there for the first time. And now I think it's switching again, and it's more of an international, truly international, that the concerns of Nevada casinos don't dominate it anymore. And the real question, of course, everybody asks, what do you see in terms of slot machines? And I don't know if I saw anything that's new. It's everybody is rehashing old ideas, the major slot manufacturers. But I suspect that that's going to change, and whether or not your pinball and your pinball wizard is the change or not, I don't know the answer to that. Atlantic City said today they're going to begin courting the social gaming companies and try to get them to come to Atlantic City and partner with casinos and start to offer some of those games. Skill-based games where players bet against each other. And that hasn't come, but with the consolidation in the industry, we have to go. We have to do something because the old model is not particularly effective any longer.
Yeah, I thought this pinball idea or the skill-based gaming at least was a good attempt, as opposed to the people who look at, you know, what is the hot new, what is the hot television show with young people? Oh, Game of Thrones. We'll make a Game of Thrones slot machine or you know what I mean? I just think that idea is not going to fly, you know?
For one thing, in my mind, I don't see any linear connection between the theme of the game and what you do. You're still doing exactly the same things you were doing before, pushing the button, or some of them have put handles back on them, and watching reels spin or watching something like that happen. So I don't see any connection. But, you know, you have the pictures, and Elvis or somebody sings in your ear, or Ellen talks over the top of you. Absolutely no connection in my mind, and I don't think it's resonating with the people who really are interested in those things. I don't think they feel like they're engaged in something that's really related. Although some of those games are successful, but once again, with the audience that's closer to my age than the age of the people they're trying to attract.
Now, there's a lot of contraction in the gaming world. IGT?
Mm-hmm. Consolidation, we call it.
All right. Squeezing out. IGT was gobbled up by GTEC. PokerStars was taken over by Amaya. Bally Gaming and WMS now belong to Scientific Games. Do you foresee this consolidation continuing, and do you see it as a good thing?
Uh-huh. Well, the industry's mature. And everybody, there's slot machines. You can't sell slot machines the same way you used to. I talked to some buyers in Las Vegas, people who were doing the same thing that I used to when I was in, and they do it differently. They don't buy nearly as many slot machines as they used to. And they're very careful with how they spend that money. And they're not just buying what the inflated price slot machines that are being offered. And that slowing down of that revenue stream is forcing the major slot manufacturers to do something to grow their revenues. And one of the ways to do it, it's a Wall Street way, is you acquire somebody new and then you have more revenues until the next following year for the same quarter, and of course you don't. And then you reduce your costs by the combining, and you can eliminate some. The Valley number was they were going to be able to lay off 20% of the whatever the number was today in the news. But that's a normal business thing. The casinos, certainly Caesars and MGM, spent a lot of time doing that. They bought up every casino company that was around, all the names that you knew and loved in Las Vegas 20 years ago. If the mainstay may be outside the building, Circus may have Circus on the outside, but it certainly all belongs to one of the conglomerates. But then over time, that doesn't work anymore, and they have other issues, and then they begin to sell those things off one piece at a time, right? So MGM has sold two of those off. Caesars is certainly trying to get rid of some of theirs and closing and doing some things. So I think it's just a cyclical thing that happens. And you see some consolidation until the consolidation has pretty much taken everything that it can. and then some time while they absorb that, and then after, maybe it takes years, and sometimes it's only a very short period of time before people then start to say, there's too much of this, and we need to get rid of some of this and reduce our debt, and the process changes again. So do I think it's a good thing? I hope for the sake of the industry that it's a good thing in terms of slot machines, and we get some new thinking and some new business models out of slot machines rather than just repeat what the industry's been doing for the last 15 years.
Yeah, I noticed the same thing, and Shaq, Mike Shackelford, when he was here, brought it up, that a lot of the new table games are just rehashes of old table games, that there doesn't seem to be much innovation going on.
You know, I one of the things that I saw on the show was I saw lots of people nearly my age who were coming back into the industry, and they were re-engineering I talked to about six or seven people. They were re-engineering old ideas to fit into this world. That for one thing, they were trying to slide into the expensive slot machines and find a way to add on and to make slot machines appear to be new to people. And the same thing with true table games, that the people are trying to find ways to slide into that. You're not going to get casinos to add many new tables, so that you have to kind of find a way to get into that. And I saw a lot of that. I don't know how some of them may be successful. We'll just have to wait and see. I don't. But
well, there's certainly this generation does not have a monopoly on all the best ideas. And now, when you say your age, is it unfair to say mid 70s or?
Yeah.
And possibly an idea that worked 30 years ago would still work, slightly tweaked.
It'd be something that's so old is new again.
Mm-hmm. Some of them will. Some of the ideas have to do with progressives and with signage. And they were solid concepts, marketing concepts at the time. And they'll work now because behaviorally they work. They appeal to people at the right level, and they show the product at the right way. So they will work, and with new technology, they'll be better than they were the first round on. Some of those will work. How long they'll be effective and whether or not they'll ever have an important part of the industry, I don't know. But some of them will work for sure.
If you really want to bring young people into gaming, get them gambling, then they should just pass internet gaming so they can gamble on their phone. I mean, they'd all start gambling if they could gamble online on their telephone.
Would that help get them into a casino, or would it keep them from getting into a casino?
Actually, I think it would help get them into a casino. Once they're used to playing, I could see them wanting to play live, and the casinos are going to own the online gaming anyway, so, you know, it's good for them either way.
I don't see it quite that way, but certainly lots of people in the industry do.
How do you see it, Ken?
Well, if you have $100 million invested in the casino and you get some new players and they're playing someplace other than your casino, it's really hard to service that debt without getting them in there and selling them any of that other stuff. Food and hotel and all the other stuff. But for certain that the internet is going to be part of the future and that the games that are developed on the internet are going to be part of the future. That's absolutely certain. I think we need more skill-based games and more inter-player competition where the players are playing against each other like they do with all those games online. And if you introduce those kind of games to them in an exciting environment, I think that you have a chance. I don't think you have a chance in painting a slot machine a different color and putting a new person's face on the top and having a new soundtrack coming out of it. But
amen.
All right. Different question. I didn't warn you this was coming because I just saw it in the news today. So I want to warn our listeners that Ken is off the cuff on this one. So Atlantic City sports betting. Apparently the New Jersey Assembly in their legislature passed the bill giving this to go ahead. What does your crystal ball say about sports betting in New Jersey?
Well, it says that the Professional Sport League are going to sue to stop it from implementing it.
Because football has a couple of
all of the games. Professional sports leagues have gone together in this suit every single time any state other than the three states, Oregon, Delaware, and
Nevada,
have tried to do sports betting because those are the only ones that are legal, and they don't want it. The cynics think that as soon as they find a way to partner in it, that the sports leagues will be just fine with it. But we'll see.
But it does seem like New Jersey is getting closer. I mean, there've been some.
Well, they've been coming at it, and now for a couple of years they just keep trying, and they get one way or another they get pushed back and start over again. But
all right, so you're not real optimistic that it's going to be successful.
I don't know. The professional sports leagues have so far been very effective at keeping it out. And it's as you know, that sports betting, no matter how good it is, it's not going to save Atlantic City. And it may be good for them, and it may help a little, but it's not going to save anybody.
Boy, I don't know. I mean, suddenly they would have a monopoly again, and they would have all the traffic from New York and Pennsylvania. If they were to get it, which I believe they will, and if it's extremely successful, which I think it will be, the other states will follow suit again and say, we're losing too much money to New Jersey. Let's, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ken, I don't know if you've been following this, but have you been following the push to legalize gambling in Japan?
You know, I read the stuff. I don't know as I understand it. Today the latest news is they're going to make a compromise where they're going to limit the number and they didn't say the number of visits a person will have, but the number of Japanese citizens who could be in the casino at any one time. Well, there are 14 Japanese in there now, no more to bore. And that compromise may be enough to get it through the legislature.
Right. At one point, they announced that they weren't going to allow any Japanese citizens to go in the casino, and that got immediate pushback. So now they need to, but that is the law, or at least it used to be in Korea, that Koreans couldn't play in the casinos in Korea.
Right.
Unless they had a foreign passport.
But it's true in the Bahamas, which is not a major gambling spot, but they have that rule there too.
Korea is considering that there's some regions where Korea is considering allowing them. Vietnam is in the same kind of thing. How many do we let the Vietnamese come in, and is there some? It's like the Atlantic City model. It hasn't fully developed yet, but as the competition gets more intense and the governments get used to whatever amount of money they get out of it, then they're going to start to make more compromises to try and protect that revenue stream. And as they make them, their competitors are going to make them too, and round and round you go. As you said about the sports book, they'd get it in New Jersey, then in New York's coming right behind them.
Now, we received an email from a listener who was playing a table game and was next to a player who blatantly passed posted. The cheat had bet 3 green chips, $75, on the base game and nothing on the bonus bet. When the player looked at his cards, he realized that if he had money on the bonus bet, he'd make a killing. So he flicked the top $25 chip from his regular bet into the bonus bet section. This went unnoticed by the casino, and the player reaped a big payoff. Richard, what did you make of that?
You know, the guy's an idiot and he's going to get caught. I mean, you can't get away with that for long. And if I were a player on that table, I would probably get up right away and move to another table, because eventually all eyes in surveillance are going to be on that guy. I mean, it's what we used to call a rank move. Obviously, the cheat is not a professional, and he's going to get caught quickly.
Now, we had Richard Marcus on this show, and he described moves, not that exact move, but something similar, and he apparently got away with them for years. But that was before surveillance was so...
Yeah, the surveillance today is so much better than it was. That.
So, Ken, if you were running a casino and this was happening at, and you this was discovered to happen at your casino, what would you do?
The film is considered evidence by the Gaming Control. So you call Gaming Control, they come in, they arrest the guy, and they use the film as evidence, and Gaming Control attempts to prosecute.
So
it's just a simple thing. If you have evidence of cheating, it's your a casino is charged, and the minimum standards of Nevada is to run a casino with integrity, and it's not allowed to. It's against the regulations to allow cheating by either side. So anybody who cheats, you report them to the state. You have the evidence now with the film. You say, here's the evidence. The state reviews the evidence and arrests the person. It's really straightforward.
Well, it's straightforward, but there's always gray areas. If this guy is a big loser at the house, and
it's not
this...
worth, no matter how much he's lost, it's not worth your gaming license.
Oh, but nobody's going to lose a gaming license in Nevada.
Well, I mean, you haven't had one, but I can tell you, when you have a gaming license, you are very sensitive to those things. And you might not lose your gaming license, but you could be fined $100,000 for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You could be fined money for he's not worth your time. It is not worth your time at a casino to tolerate something. And I know it happens. So, you know, the drunk guy who's got a lot of money, and he, now Frank Sinatra used to get behind a table and deal in Atlantic City, and nobody stopped him. And people won that he wanted to win. You know, it's pretty simple. And but still, a casino does not, by policy, risk on those kind of circumstances. Sometimes an individual employee will, but a casino by policy doesn't. So the casino policy is really straightforward. You have to report it.
Good.
If you have knowledge of it, you have to report it.
I suspect if I owned a casino, I would have that point of view as well. Thank you, Ken Adams. It was very informative. Whatever subject we throw at you, your opinion, you were knowledgeable and interesting. So we thank you very much for coming on the air with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more games than anybody else has. In October, the promotion is called $600,000 Monster Money. There will be a casino-wide progressive that begins at $10,000 and keeps expanding until it's hit, which must be before $25,000. In addition to the winner, every player actively playing with a player's card inserted when the progressive goes off receives $25 in free play. And when it's hit, a new progressive begins immediately at $10,000. In addition, 11 o'clock every day, another progressive starts at $1,000 and must be hit before $2,500. When it hits, it stays down until 11 o'clock the next day. The free video poker class next week is NSU Deuces Wild. This is a particular pay schedule of Deuces Wild that returns 99.73 with accurate play. It is still available in Nevada for stakes up to Well, $250 a pop is the biggest I know about. But it's also available for nickels in places. I don't know about that. It's available for quarters for sure. And so Deuces Wild is a fun game. So anyway, we're going to be teaching it this coming Wednesday at noon at the Grand View Lounge. If you're at least 21 years of age, you're invited. At the Palms, the weekly drawing in October happens on Saturday in October rather than Friday. $10,000 each week shared among 10 winners. First prize, $3,500. You don't need to be there to win, but you need to claim by midnight or the money evaporates. Five times entries Friday and Saturday night, 8 to midnight. Two times entries all day, Sunday and Tuesday. PFP, play for prizes, through tomorrow. The prize is Lowe's gift cards, up to $175 a day, plus up to $30 a day in Einstein Bagel gift cards. Beginning Monday, the gifts will be Kohl's gift cards. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a year, or $8.95 a month, or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. It's a good place to practice quick quads, for example. You get the strategy from me or Shaq's website, but if you want correction, go to videopoker.com. For most players, you have no idea of how badly you really play until you have a computer programmer correcting your play. The game of the week this week is 50 play quick quads, which is a really fun game. 50 play is cool and quick quads is fun. It's the game I play most at the South Point, and I am playing at the South Point for this Monster Money promotion. And it's only 10 play at the South Point. Triple play, 5 play, 10 point. 50 play would be a lot more fun. And anyway, that's pretty cool. Pretty cool game. Okay. We got a email from one of our listeners who's on a cruise ship. Apparently, he came across an advantage play that he wanted to share with the rest of you. Richard, what did we find out?
Yeah, well, this is another one of those credit card plays. On either Royal Caribbean cruises or Celebrity cruises. Apparently, both of those, Royal and Celebrity, they offer their own credit cards. So if you get one of their credit cards, you get 10,000 points for signing up, which are worth 10,000 points is worth $100 just for getting the card. But if you use the card for charging things related to the cruise, you get double points. But what he found that's actually kind of cool is that you can apparently go into this casino every night and get chips using your credit card. And I guess this doesn't count as a cash advance. And he got his limit up to 5,000 a night. So on a 7-day cruise, he got,
30,000 or something.
35,000 double points, 70,000. So $700 basically good for, I guess, the next cruise or things on the cruise, that kind of stuff. So, yeah. So anyway, kind of a worth doing if you're going to go on a cruise anyway.
If you're going to pay for those cruises. NCL, Norwegian, used to have something similar, but then you can't use it for cash advances in casinos anymore.
They stopped that.
They stopped that. Apparently, I don't know if there were people taking advantage of it. Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
It's a good thing they weren't in London, or they would say they were deceiving them. And
all right. So next week we got Bob Nersessian. So we're going to talk to him about Phil Ivey a lot, and possibly even about this video poker case. I don't know.
Yeah.
So what else are we going to talk to Bob Nersessian about? Or do we need ideas from our listeners?
Well, we always want to hear from our listeners. You can reach us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge. You know, the other thing is we will be talking to him about money seizures. I mentioned on my blog that I got contacted by the television show Inside Edition. And they were doing a show about how blackjack players get roughed up by security guards for counting cards. And I said to the guy on the show, you know, the other problem that blackjack players have that's really more of a problem is that the police in this country have become highway robbers.
Yes, they have.
And I know this is a subject that Bob Nersessian gets very passionate about. And
yes, he does.
So the guy from Inside Edition was very excited about the idea. He said that was already on his radar, that he wanted to do a piece about, you know, police being highway robbers, and they were going to rig a car with hidden cameras. And, you know, and I suggested he pick I-40 going through northern Arizona as a prime location, but there are several others.
Out-of-state plates,
yeah, exactly.
Going exactly the speed limit.
Well, that's suspicious when you drive the speed limit. Or if you drive over or under the speed limit, that's also suspicious. I referred the guy from Inside Edition to Bob, also to Bob Loeb, because I know he gets a number of those cases as well. So hopefully we'll be seeing some good shows coming up on Inside Edition about both blackjack players. I guess they went with Mike Aponte to some casinos to try to capture, you know, some barrings. And I said to him, man, I could have given you some better players where you could have had him taken out in handcuffs, you know. So it's too bad. I guess they didn't really get any great barrings, but we'll see.
Yeah, Mike's kind of a quiet guy. He's husky.
Right, but you send a guy like Tommy Hyland's in and, you know, steam starts coming out of the ears of the shift bosses, so...
Yeah, the it's also on cardplayer.com. You mentioned blackjack players get robbed by police. Their concern on that site is poker players who have money from site to site gets robbed by the police. And it's in the news more and more and more. You'd think there would be a lot more public outcry about this.
Yeah, there was a case a few weeks ago of two poker players in Iowa, where the dashboard cam, caught the whole thing. And I have a link on my site where you can see the dashboard cam from the police car. But you also hear the two poker players sitting in the back of the squad car as the cop is up, you know, looking through his car. They're discussing, you know, and the cop pulls the money out and just dumps it all on the hood of the police car that they find, over $100,000. So those poker players did get their money back, but...
they're lucky. Usually there's a tax. There is.
They had to hire lawyers, right? I mean, so...
And it's not a pretty scene to... I would think that...
So I just want to remind our listeners that they can get the show delivered to them every week so you never miss it. You can sign up for that at iTunes or Stitcher or YouTube.
Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.